Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome back to Starting Nine, episode 78.
Fabo, let's go.
Dallas Braden took it upon himself in this episode to go out there, get himself an interview with the Birdman Bat Boys out there. By the way, I would love to go because I'm going to be out there. I'm assuming I'll be out there in Oakland in April.
Yeah, Beantown, the Sox. Let's see you guys start off. Where you start? I'm not sure where you guys start off. I think
Red Sox start the season with an 11-game fucking West Coast road.
You guys start in Seattle, I believe, right? Do you start in Seattle?
Arizona?
Really? Arizona? I thought it was Seattle, Oakland, whatever. Either way, yes, we got a 4-game piece with the Sox.
Oh, it's 4 games in Oakland.
Oh, it's a 4-game Johnny. And then I will see you at the very end of that month back in Boston, Carrabas.
Oh, boy. Yeah, they open with 4 in Seattle.
Yeah.
And then 4 in Oakland, and then they go to Arizona.
Come on, baby. Come on. West Coast riding.
I mean, I'd rather get it out of the way. I'd rather come back, you know, whatever it is, 10-1 and just, you know, do like the rings and the banners and whatnot. I'd rather just get that out of the way right off the top.
Hey, do you think the Red Sox are going to bring their bats for all 3 games this year against the A's, or for all 4 games? Or is there going to... Yeah, because I actually, Jared, it's pretty cool if you watch the video that I did with Birdman. I actually asked a question about whether or not they've ever made bats with holes in them. And I feel like there might have been a couple guys that got that stockpile last year in Boston. But nonetheless, I feel like it's still going to be a great series for you. It's going to be fun. It's baseball. It's baseball back in the Bay Area where you had so much fun when you guys – I mean, granted, it wasn't fun for you. It was a lot of fun for a lot of the fans who got to just scream at you and jump down your throat, figuratively, not literally. But, I mean, you were a fan favorite there. They enjoyed you there.
Yeah.
I have gotten a couple requests from the folks who worked behind the diamond level there to not have you back because they just don't have enough beef tips. They don't have enough cows in Northern California to fucking – To cure the insatiable appetite that is Carrabas's beef tip desire.
Yeah. I mean, you can't just tell me, hey, yeah, all the food you want. It's like, all right, well, what do you got? Oh, you got beef tips for days. It's like, well, I will be enjoying all the beef tips that I can possibly get out there in Oakland. By the way, we recorded a bunch of those videos. Did they ever come out?
What are you talking about? What videos? Those, the like, videos that we recorded, yeah, they came out. Yeah, those dropped, like the ones where I was like yelling at you.
The promo vids?
Yeah, the promo vids. Yeah, I don't think I ever saw those.
No, like as I kind of alluded to on Twitter yesterday in regards to little Davey Portnoy, she's so cute. He started chirping about, I don't know. Anytime I see him run his mouth about baseball, I instantly just want to zip his mouth shut. So it's no wonder that a baseball highlight, and Jay Hay, you can attest to this, baseball highlights have been known to just quickly disappear from Barstool Sports. So it's
highlights,
no wonder.
Highlight rights.
It's no wonder to me that highlight still hasn't made the light of day, Jared.
Wait, so Jay Hay, have you seen these videos out there in the public?
Yeah.
From where do they come from?
The Starting Nine account.
I mean, I feel like we can put them out again this year and no one will know the difference. I didn't.
Well, that's a separate question, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, they will.
I certainly didn't promote them.
I don't know why we wouldn't, actually.
Yeah, we should.
Well, no, you got to remember, this is like, you know, we're in year 3.
You guys are just the same ugly
yeah.
as you were then.
Well, I have hair now.
Well, and Sean Manaea is not going to be able to pitch this time around against the Red Sox, so that means there might be hits allowed too. So it won't be the same. We won't be able to run it back completely.
Mm-hmm. So Dallas is in Arizona right now.
And it's fucking raining, Carrabas. It's fucking raining.
Can I did see that in one of your Instagram videos. I did see that.
Yeah, raining out here. But still getting that work in.
Yeah, so I will be getting on a plane on Sunday to get to Arizona. By the way, we have a lot planned. I had someone come up to my desk today and be like, hey, so you know, when you're in Arizona, like you guys are gonna be doing this, we got this, that, and that, and that we also booked this and that. I was like, what the fuck? We're gonna be there for a whole week. Apparently we're doing a billion things while we're down there. So the content, if you're a baseball fan, don't worry. We got you covered. You don't have to worry about any other outlet for your baseball needs. Well, I mean, by the time we're done interviewing all the people that we're interviewing, we might as well interview Bat Boys. We might as well interview Clubbies. Like it's the amount of content that's going to be coming out of our Arizona and Florida trips. It seems to be never ending. So I'm excited for that. You should be excited for that. We're all excited for that.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time, man. We're talking about anything from go-kart racing to Top Golf. We've got a lot of stuff on the docket right now. It's just about getting all that stuff finalized, squared away, getting the schedule set. But I'm with you, man. Talking to our boy Lofty, we have got a lot of meat on the bone.
Yeah, it's going to be quite the experience. Jay Hay, wish you could be there.
In spirit.
In spirit, he will be there. Always in spirit. So yeah, Arizona is where we're heading. Dallas, why don't you tell the people a little bit about Arizona tourism?
Well, you know where I'm at right now. You know
you are in Arizona.
I am in Arizona, and I'm specifically sitting in Tempe. And you want to know what I did this morning, Jared? What did you do this morning? I got up this morning and took about a 7-minute drive from Tempe, Arizona, right into Mesa, Arizona, where the Oakland A's have their spring training. Was able to catch some pitchers and catchers getting their work in. Made my way just down the street, another 4-minute drive over to Hohokam. And that is the big field. Was able to watch BP. And if it wasn't raining, Carrabas, I'd have jumped in my ride and drove right into Scottsdale, because that's how goddamn close all of these fucking places are. It's insane. In a matter of 20 minutes, you can get, like I've said, from Tempe to Mesa to Scottsdale. That's three different teams right there. They have to play another team. That means six total teams. You've got the opportunity to catch six different baseball teams in a day if you really wanted to. We're talking 15 clubs in the Arizona area. 15. 10 different stadiums. The weather, aside from today, where it's pissing on me, is usually beautiful. 75, 80 degrees. There's a lot of skin exposed out here, if you know what I mean, during this time. It is an absolute sun ray haven out here. But the best part, Carrabas, is it's not just all baseball, right? Because baseball, hey, family fun. We got food. We got dancing. We've got entertainment. We just talked about like go-karts and fucking golf and all kind of crazy stuff we got going on. Hot air balloons. Get your ass up there, Carrabas. I know you want to go. I know you like to get high.
Oh, yeah.
Arizona.com/springtraining. Visit Arizona.com/springtraining. These are the folks that can help you get all of this stuff squared away. So when you're trying to figure out, do we want to ride horses? Do we want to go to the beach? ATV? Is it catching two ball games in a day? Do we need comedy show tickets? What do we need to do? Visit Arizona.com will point you in the right direction. So you're on deck right now, waiting to get your hacks in. Visit Arizona.com/springtraining. They can help you pick out the pitch that you're looking to hammer, whether it's food, whether it's entertainment, or it's just baseball with you and the family. You want some beers, Four Peaks, Angel's Trumpet Ale House, Goldwater Brewing Company. All of these things are available at your disposal at the click of a button. Visit Arizona.com/springtraining and bring your ass out to the desert. Bucket list me one time. Let's go.
Let's get into the news. JT Realmuto going from the Marlins to the Phillies. First of all, were either of you surprised with the landing spot?
I don't know that there's look, there was a lot of talk about this going to be the move. This was where they felt the move could occur and still keep themselves in the running for a Harper, for a Machado. And is this really, when you think about it, is this really one of the only teams that we felt this move made could go down and still have room for a Machado and Harper? Like, are the Phillies one of the only teams? Okay, the Phillies and the Padres. So these teams right here. So is it realistic, though, I guess, for the San Diego Padres and where they were, and for Real Muto, I just didn't see that being a fit for the club. I just didn't see that necessarily happening. I think Philly was a fair expectation. The fact that it happened in the fashion that it did, I think that kind of, oh, wow, we are here. Here we go. He's a Philly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that also I kind of look back at that Yasmani Grandal deal, the one-year deal that the Brewers made. They were linked to Real Muto a few months ago, and it's like, why not just sprinkle a little money on Grandal on a one-year deal, not have to give up any prospects? It's like, who do you think? All right, so here's a question. Who do you think is going to have the better season? Would it be JT Real Muto with the Phillies or Yasmani Grandal on a one-year deal with the Brewers when also JT is 2 years away from free agency?
Yeah, I mean, so I are you hinting at the idea of Grandal having something to play for, like another carrot being dangled in front of him?
Got the option too, right?
Right. Well, I mean, that's a vesting option, is it not? So, like, I mean, that's performance based. He's got a. I don't know the details of that option, but I mean, that's a club option. That's not a player option, right?
I'm gonna look it up.
Okay. I believe it's a club option. I believe Brian Wilson is like one of the last guys that I thought was handed a player option. And he was like, yeah, I'll take that 10.5 mil. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think, look, the Phillies, I've said that the Yankees have won the offseason. I don't know that the Phillies are that far behind.
The Yankees have won the offseason?
I mean, they've been the most active. No?
I mean, they've done a lot, but what have they done that's been like, oh, wow. I mean, they brought back Gardner, they brought back Sabathia, they brought back J-Hap, they brought back Zach Britton. They've brought back guys, which is important. I'm not knocking that, but what move have they made where it's like, oh shit, like that's thinking outside the box, or oh shit, that's a major splash. They haven't done that.
Well, no. That is a fair point. So I guess in my analyzing or assessment of winning the offseason, I guess I would say the moves that they have made, the folks that they have continued to reinforce their club with, I think they have done a very good job of that, and if not the best job. Yeah.
But you said that the Phillies are not far behind the Yankees for offseason champs. Do you think, I personally think that there is a 95% chance that the Phillies get either Machado or Harper. They get one. Like, what's the scenario where that doesn't happen? I mean, I guess the scenario would be Machado to the White Sox, Harper to the Giants. The Phillies miss out on both. But in that case, don't you see the Phillies still going out and getting Kimbrel? So then they're going to spend somewhere. They could go out and sign Dallas Keuchel. Like, if the Phillies miss out on Harper or Machado, they're not just going to be like, oh, well, we're done then. I feel like they can still do something because they did, in a way, almost promise that.
No, I mean, yeah, but so with the addition of Robertson, I mean, you don't think that that has anything, you don't think that plays a role in whether or not they want to go out and get Kimbrel?
I mean, I think,
because the AAV is going to play a role in that, right? That what sure, Greg is going to be asking for.
Yeah.
So I think it's along that same premise.
If they miss on Machado and Harper. If they miss on Machado and Harper, then they're going to have money to spend. And it's like, all right, well, a guy like Robertson, can he close? Yeah, of course he can. But would you rather have Kimbrel closing and Robertson setting him up? Yeah, for sure.
It kind of makes me think, like, if they are really in on a Harper and Machado, and for whatever reason they miss out on both of those dudes, and a Keuchel Kimbrel combo is still laying around out there,
yeah, go get it.
Am I crazy to think that they could say fuck it and cut that pie in half and try to feed both those dudes with whatever they were going to feed Machado or whatever they're going to feed Harper?
Yeah, I mean, it would make a lot of sense if that's where their focus shifted. Well,
and that would just be throwing every inch of their anatomy on the table, ball sack included, going, yep, we're here. We're here to win now. We are here to fucking win. NL East on notice.
Yeah, I mean, what are the odds in your mind that Harper doesn't end up in Philly? Because I get that. What's the latest odds that the Giants are the favorites now?
To land Harper?
Yeah.
Are they? I haven't looked at the...
I feel like it's been changing day to day. I mean, I know that the Machado one was changing day to day. The Yankees were the favorites like 3 days ago, and now the White Sox are back to being the favorites.
Honestly, when we have these conversations, though, isn't this tantamount to John Heyman tweeting what we are saying right now?
That fucking puppet.
I mean, because honestly, we're all sitting here just going, look, man, we've kind of hashed this out. We have talked about this ad nauseum at this point. Yeah. Like, pitchers and catchers are here. Position players report tomorrow. The idea of figuring out a fit and this and that, and like, I don't even know what to make of this shit anymore. Like, it's still so new to me, Carrabas, to be sitting here thinking about two of the game's most intriguing, most dynamic talents not having a place to go. I don't care what your reason is. I don't care what your reason is. The idea that they're just one out of 30 teams isn't like, fuck it, we'll give you this. That's not happening. It's just not that day is gone. So it is still very, like, as much as I might understand it, it is still very, very, it shakes me. It fucking rattles me. It makes me emotional. You know what I mean? I sleep with the lights on thinking about fucking free agency.
Well, did you see this most recent report that came out a couple of hours ago? Again, we're recording on, what's today, Thursday? Thursday. This is from Chris Schoen at Yes. Talk to someone with knowledge of the ongoing Harper Machado saga. He doesn't think it will resolve until mid-March. That is a fucking month from now.
Uh-huh.
We saw that tweet go viral earlier this morning that Manny Machado has been a free agent longer than he was a Dodger at this point. And that's going to continue for apparently another month. And that's why, like, I don't understand where some of this shit comes from, because I remember before Christmas break, Hubs showing me some tweet from some reporter, you know, Manny Machado is, he's going to make his decision within the next week. And that was like December 8th. It's like, okay. So yeah, he'll have this thing right. It'll go like right up until Christmas, but we'll have this thing wrapped up by Christmas. It's Valentine's Day.
Like, what? It makes me so now. I would ask these front offices. I would ask these folks who bang the numbers. Okay, you have now gotten everybody's attention, and people are now paying attention to how you're analyzing these players. And we are taking note of how the compensation process is going as well. We're also taking note how the acquisition process is going as well. If you're into deals and you're into talent, why in the fuck would you be pursuing one of these dudes at the risk of not having them ready to go for you April 1? What are you like? Do they mean that much to you? Basically, I want to ask front offices now at this point in time, are you just okay with eliminating everybody that's worth a fuck in the game of baseball to be able to say, look at how cost efficient we are? Because if that's what you're after, we're not going to have fans here. How many fucking people sit down and watch the stock market? Like, if there was a channel to just watch the stock market, I'm not talking about analysts coming on and opining about a stock to look for or something like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just actual fucking numbers scrolling on a TV channel. How many people are signing up for that shit? Zero. That's your answer. Zero. But that's kind of the way we're headed if we're just going to be okay with Harper's and Machado's and Keuchel's and Kimball's just not having fucking homes. And you're saying, I don't care if you're prepared. That right there is a prime example of how out of touch these fucking math nerds are with what it actually takes to get going on a baseball field. You don't just take all of your raw data numbers and put them in a uniform and just get that production the minute that you plug it in. That's not how this fucking goes.
Question for both of you. Bryce Harper is, I mean, apparently there have been some, I think the Yankees were one of the teams that were rumored to offer Bryce Harper big money on a short-term deal, and he is standing pat that I want the long-term big money deal. Do you think that that is Harper stubbornness, or do you think that that is Scott Boras' strategy, or do you think it is both? And if you were Bryce Harper at this stage of the game, would you entertain like 3 years and $100 million or something like that? You would literally get to become a free agent again before your age 29, 30 season.
Right. Well, this is the thing about posturing is you're now like at this point in time, you know, everybody's reported. Your teams have reported now. So you've been posturing to try to get the best for yourself. So is your representation. This is all about posturing. Well, if you're taking that approach, you know, at some point in time, you're going to have to face a decision. Do we step down off of this hill here and come to terms, or do we just keep our heads down and keep trucking and wait for somebody to show up with their checkbook? How do we go about this? And that's the tough spot. And that's why I feel it's a combination of the information that Harper is getting over years, I mean, decades, frankly, of expertise from Scott Boras. The problem is those decades of expertise are now being put to the test because this is a very, very new frontier that everybody is embarking on, that everybody is living in right now. So it has a lot to do with the player understanding I have to stand pat because I have earning power right now, and I am going to impact the future CBA. So that's something that fans don't understand. When you are on a team like baseball players are, there's a bigger team involved, and that's the union, okay? When you have guys that are getting ready to make X amount of dollars, those guys set the bar. They set the standard. So much like minimum wage goes in our country, whether you agree with it or not, whatever, there's a minimum, right? And there's been people that have gone on strike, that have taken stances in order for those numbers to rise to meet the necessary level to survive in our country. Well,
right.
We look to these baseball players to take those stances. We look to these guys to make sure that our earning power as players stays what it is. So as we are at the most pivotal time in free agency, the most pivotal time in compensation in the history of our game, it is as important as it has ever been to make sure that we are getting what we deserve as players. And that's the bottom line. And I hate the word strike. I hate the thought of it. Every baseball player does. If you think you're going to find one who wants to do that, I'm calling you to your face a fucking liar. That dude doesn't exist. But when you're talking about dictating the way these individuals make money and are compensated from here on out for the chapter two of our game, if you will, that's why the heels are dug in. That's why Manny Machado and Bryce Harper don't have jobs right now. Partly because they want what they want and they want what they deserve. And partly because they're going to bat, no pun intended, for more players than just themselves.
Yeah. It's an odd situation when you have Major League Baseball players not even hiding the fact that we could be heading towards a strike. A lot of these guys that have their money and they have their security are still fed up and pissed off about the current state of the free agent market. And they're speaking openly about a potential strike somewhere down the road, being like, we're totally heading that way. And no one is being sort of coy about it. So that would suck a lot.
Yeah, it'd be terrible. It'd be fucking terrible, man. Yeah. Trust me. Like I said, dude, it gives me sweat fits. Like I seriously, my palms start to sweat when I think about like no baseball. Like, what? No, don't do that. Don't do that.
No, I I mean, I was five in 1994, so I didn't have to live through that really. I don't think that I could handle that as an adult man.
Yeah, it's nuts. I'm getting ready to watch Matt Williams hit fucking 86 home runs and then nope.
But to be honest with you, not that I'm rooting for a strike or anything, but if hypothetically, if there was a strike, I could start watching a little KBO.
that's when we go over to Japan.
How hard it would be to access regular KBO games?
It's 2019. The internet is a beautiful thing. I'm sure I could find a stream somewhere to become like a diehard KBO fan for a year. Lions. Sticking with the Phillies here a little bit, Aaron Nola.
Yeah.
Getting himself an extension, which is awesome news for the Phillies. This guy, you don't want to – it's always a great situation for the player, for the team, for the fans. If you can get your stud signed to an extension so you can buy out those arbitration years. We just saw that story. By the way, he's a psychopath, so it's not exactly the standard or the norm. But Trevor Bauer talking about character assassination.
Love it.
Because of what the Cleveland Indians had to say about him in the arbitration hearing. If you can avoid a situation where the team is forced to talk to an arbitration panel about why this player isn't worth what they're claiming that they're worth, it's probably a good thing. You don't want to do that with your studs.
No. Oh, you're talking about from the team's perspective.
Yeah, it's from the team's perspective. You don't want to have to be faced with a situation where you're creating a disgruntled superstar for no fucking reason. Just
no,
you avoid don't arbitration.
First and foremost, let's start with Nola. Bread it up, chicken titties, get your paper, son. Love it.
Yeah.
What is interesting about this and what this deal kind of does is gives us an opportunity to look at what a future contract would look like should we be able to revamp the ARB eligible, free agent eligible process. So 4-year deal, 5th-year option with a buyout, buying up his arbitration years, mm-hmm. buying up 1 year of his free agency with an option on his 2nd year. Correct?
Yeah, which is pretty standard. Most sure. guys will do that if you're going to give a contract extension to a guy that is pre-arb or arbitration eligible, most of them buy out at least 1 year of free agency.
Right. But now let's fast forward to where I believe we as a union, as a players union, will be heading in terms of request. 2 years arb and then we are a free agent, okay? So what's he getting here? He's getting, what's the breakdown here? He'll get $4 million in 2019, $8 million in 2020. And under my proposed free agent ARB situation here, after that $11 million over 2 years or $12 million over 2 years, guess what, boys? Free agent.
Yeah.
Free agent. So that $11.75 million that he's making in 2021 in his first year of free agency, his 3rd year of ARB, that would be his first chance to go and see if anybody would be willing to pay him a qualifying offer, which is probably going to be somewhere around $20 million.
By that point, yeah.
Absolutely. So that is the importance of being able to be paid in a window that they are evaluating you in. So if you're telling me this is the window in which I'm going to be evaluated, outstanding. I just need you to know that I'm going to be asked to be compensated in that window as well. You're not just going to be able to start buying up all of this other time and think that I'm not going to be privy to that being my maximum earning capability. So fuck you. Arbitration 2 years. Thanks for the 12. And now I'm going to go ahead and kick the tires on free agency. You can sit on your 11.75 and figure out where that's going to go because I'm going to free agency.
Another question posed to the panel here. This Aaron Nola extension, what young pitcher in the game right now do you think will be next in line to use the Nola extension as a benchmark for their own?
Oh, man.
It's a good question.
Like Walker Buehler?
What about where's Snell at?
Snell, I mean, Walker Buehler is what? He's 1 year in. I think Snell's 2 years in. So, I mean, this could be something.
Either one of those dudes, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't expect it. This is something that I think would probably be visited next offseason for both of them. But those are two pretty good names to start with, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Those are, I mean, because right now, go ahead, Jay.
No, I was going to say, I think the answer, the first answer may be right in front of us with the report that the Yankees and Severino have been talking extension. I mean, obviously he has a little bit more of a track record than Buehler maybe not Snell, but at least if there's smoke, there could be fire with Severino. And I mean, I would guess that, I don't know, it would be interesting, right? Because he doesn't have necessarily the peak season that Aaron Nola just put up, but he's also the guy signing after Nola. So maybe Nola had established something of a current benchmark or something like that. But I would think Severino's the next guy.
Interesting. I mean,
yeah, I would say with the Dodgers and with what they have on their hands with Clayton Kershaw in terms of just kind of seeing how much more they're going to be able to get out of him on a year-to-year basis, if they see a talent like Buehler in front of them having the success that he's had and that he can continue to have, that he can grow, I don't see any reason why the Dodgers wouldn't jump all over trying to secure themselves another franchise type starter.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that they want to see more from him before they're like, sure, hey, like let's lock it up through these arb years, but for sure a candidate, for sure. I mean, Blake Snell would be first in line after the year that he had last year.
Yeah, that's Snellzilla. Go get your paper, sir.
I feel like we're missing somebody though. I feel like we're missing somebody.
Well, probably. I mean, you just sprung that question on me. I wasn't really prepared for that.
Yeah, same. But it's like we're supposed to know this shit. But if I think
I like my answer.
Yeah, I like my answer.
Yes.
Blake Snell? Shit.
Yeah, Blake Snell. Get
off me. Hey, Dallas, I got a question for you before we move on from Nola.
What now?
Fuck.
The media coverage of this contract has been on the negative side. As in, like, Rosenthal wrote an article on The Athletic saying that's titled "Why Aaron Nola's Extension is Drawing Criticism from Rival Agents." So there is obviously some agenda involved there, but like, do you see, like, is that a legitimate thing to you that he kind of undersold his future earning potential in a situation where players are currently fighting for like not every dollar they can get? That makes it seem a little dire, but like, you know, are being fought out deserve in free agency. Yeah.
So the way that this can be interpreted is, and this is why we believe as players the system is broken, because we are seeing right before our very eyes a scenario in which ownership and front offices are playing the vulnerability of a young player against them. And for Aaron, no, like Sean Doolittle was vocal about this, and he had a great Twitter thread going last night about it. About the deal that he signed, when he signed it, and why he signed it. Coming off injury, an opportunity to secure himself some, you know, financial wealth for him and his family moving forward. But had he not signed that deal, he found himself that very next year, or shortly thereafter, injured. And then shortly after that, injured again. Platform year, heading into what would have been free agency. So how do you tell me that taking money is not the right move for some of these guys based on what we're watching the front offices do? We're watching front offices tell you that Bryce Harper and Manny Machado just aren't that valuable, that Dallas Keuchel teams can do without him. Craig Kimbrel, just not somebody a team needs. That's what front offices are trying to fucking tell you guys right now. Not you, trying to tell us. That's what they're trying to tell us. So you have teams trying to play themselves up, and they're taking advantage of, I don't know, Aaron, you know, I mean, with the strike looming, and, you know, this could be an opportunity to secure generational wealth. This could be an opportunity to really make sure that you're, and that is the issue. So for the folks, that's why the system is broken. I understand that veterans might be saying, hey, look, man, we got to be a little smarter in how we go about these deals. But the young guys, again, are going to go, I'm sorry, when I get $45 million thrown at me based on the way shit's going right now, I'm just not in a position to say no. Thank you.
Okay. before we move on to some of these other signings, I mentioned Daisuke Matsuzaka earlier. Did you see the story about him getting injured, Dallas?
I saw it briefly. I didn't read it. I just kind of thumbed over it. Some overzealous fan at FanFest. What does that mean? What does that even mean?
Yeah. The way that I interpreted it was that someone was so excited to meet him that when they shook his hand, they fucking yanked his shoulder out of his socket.
Wow. I figured Daisuke was going all abducted in plain sight on somebody just super vigorously at the winter meetings and maybe slipped out a socket or something, but that's not the case. This fan.
Yeah.
I mean, he was sent to he firing squad, right? Right in front of everybody at FanFest.
He is a god over there. He was a bum here, but he was.
So Daisuke was drinking the blood from his neck.
Pretty much. Well, he wasn't, but somebody for sure was.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, he's a pretty low-key guy.
Well, I hope he's better.
Yeah. What's the weirdest injury that you've ever encountered in your life, Dallas, from a baseball standpoint?
The weirdest injury that I've ever encountered from like me that I've ever had myself or that I've just ever
you've ever heard of at any level of baseball. If it could be you, could be a teammate, could be an opponent, could be a friend, could be a story that you heard from somebody.
Wow. How about getting shot with a pellet gun during a game?
During a game?
Yeah. I got shot with a pellet gun during a game. We used to get shot all the time, actually, in high school.
I was going to say, I thought this was in Mexico or something.
Yeah, so our outfield fence back right up to the street, right across that street was a project building. And yeah, kids that used to live there would hang out the fucking window and pepper the outfielders with fucking BBs and pellet guns.
Jesus Christ. I mean, that I feel like that's an issue.
Yeah, it's not that. It's still not a great neighborhood. Still not a safe place.
Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And then on Thursday, the Twins handing out a pair of extensions. Max Kepler, 5 years, $35 million. He's getting also has a club option for a sixth season. That's worth $10 million. And then you get Jorge Polanco. The way that this breaks down looks like 3.5 for 2019, 3.8 in 2020, 4.3 in 2021, 5.5 in 2022, 7.5 in 2023. And both of those extensions were reported by none other than John Heyman.
You got it. Mm-hmm. Now these, we talked about Aaron Nola and we talked about buying out ARB, buying out free agency. We've talked about Machado and Harper digging their heels in, taking a stance because their decisions ultimately will impact the earning power for other individuals. And it's funny that we talk about that because a Bryce Harper decision would directly impact the earning power of a young man like Max Kepler. And if a young man like Max Kepler does not, I guess, buy into the idea or buy into the notion that he's not going to become the player that he feels like he can become, and he looks at that $35 million, much like any one of us would, and says, yeah, no, I'm into that. It's tough for him to not take that money. But from an outsider's perspective, it's very easy to say, Max, why don't you hold tight? You're probably going to become that player you think you are, that everybody kind of expected you to be. And when Harper makes this move here, you very well may be in a position afterwards to reap the benefits of that. And that's what the naysayers are alluding to when they disagree with a guy like Max Kepler agreeing to a 5-year, $35 million piece. They're going, that's just robbery. That doesn't, that works for the team and who else. And I don't, this day and age, man, it's just tough for these young kids to turn this kind of money down based on the example that's being set over the last two free agent markets and this one we're currently in, especially with the threat of a work stoppage on the horizon.
Right. I mean, they asked David Price today, you know, was it a difficult decision for you to choose to opt in? And he was like, have you seen the free agent market? Right. If David Price opted out, and I love David Price, and I think he's even now still a very, very good pitcher in this league, he wasn't sniffing the amount of money, the guaranteed money over the next 4 years that he will receive by opting in versus opting out and then trying to test the free agent waters signing elsewhere. Nope. And that's just where we're at right now. And that's, it's not a good place to be. It's not a good place to be.
Well, it's not a comfortable place to be. And we're going to keep talking about how unfortunate it is and how bad it tastes and how shitty it is. But this is the reality. So people need to move on from that, in my opinion. And we just need to start trying to make headway into how do we come to terms? How do we come to an agreement on when to pay us and how much? Because the front offices have identified when we're the most valuable to them. That's fair. We're going to tell you that we want to be paid accordingly. And that is also fair. Like, So let's meet in the middle, huh? Let's powwow. That's what needs to happen.
Yep. I agree. And then this last note, Dallas, you have the floor. Brett Anderson back to the Oakland A's.
Yeah, this was kind of cool. I sent this guy, I sent you guys this text before the news broke. And I even tweeted this. I'm not a newsbreaker. I've heard about shit like this before. I'm not one of those dudes who gets that text and is like, all right, man, I'm going to fire this off. And I hope I beat whoever to the punch about, like, I was just laughing with him and joking with him about, you know, third time around the block, bro. Third time around the block with the same organization. That doesn't happen for a lot of folks. And it's not like he left and came back. He was here and then he was a free agent and then he came back. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a matter of Oakland saying we know who this guy is and we think based on what sort of environments and situations we're going to put him in, we will be able to get out of him what we're looking for. And for Brett, it's a matter of someone saying, yep, we like you. Yep, you like to throw baseballs. We've got a job for you. Do you want it? He says, yep. And now we're all happy. That's kind of how that works out. Unfortunately, what I think the Brett Anderson acquisition means is see you later, any hopes of getting an Edwin Jackson, if you were going to pay him what he, frankly, in my opinion, deserved based on what he did last year. If you were going to compensate him for that, even close to fairly, we don't have a shot of seeing Edwin in camp with the Oakland A's at any point in time. So that's what I think the Brett Anderson signing does.
You guys are so poor. Imagine, Jay, hey, imagine in 2019 having a conversation about not being able to afford Edwin Jackson. I mean, the Red Sox are paying Ruznay Castillo triple what Edwin Jackson's worth to be on the fucking Triple A Paw Sox. It's amazing. What a time to be alive. You're so poor. Tell me about the innings festival, though. I am interested in doing this. It is in Tempe, Arizona, which is somewhere that we're going to be. I don't know if we're going to be there when the innings festival is actually happening. But if there are baseball fans in Arizona that want to learn more about this, Dallas.
No, it's pretty dope. March 2nd and 3rd this year, there's going to be three stages. There's over 18 or 20 rock, pop, alt country artist, all that jazz. So that's going to be super dope. Some of the dudes, like some of these names, we'll just start here. Eddie Vedder. Come on. Eddie Vedder?
Legend.
Out of the gate? Let's go. Incubus, Sheryl Crow, Cake, Jimmy Eat World. Wow. Hey, Has there been a Smash Mouth? Have we heard any? I don't think so. Couldn't get a hold. But there will also be player appearances alumni appearances, the father of one, the Sausage Cockpit, the Roger Clemens. The Roger Clemens will be there. Jake Peavy, Sean Casey, Houston Street, good friend of mine, Eric Burns, many more. They're going to have food. They're going to have drinks. Lots of cool vendors. They're going to have food trucks and stuff. Obviously, the music is the theme of the day. But there's going to be a ton of cool shit to do as well, like baseball-themed activities. They're going to have and maybe earmuffs, Jared. I know this is sensitive for you. They're going to have a speed pitch.
Why is that sensitive for me?
They're going to have batting cages. There's one-day and two-day tickets available. www.inningsfestival.com/barstoolsports. So go and get your tickets, one or two-day tickets. www.inningsfestival.com/barstool. Again, March 2nd and 3rd, 2019, three stages, over 18 different bands, different artists, food, player appearances, musicians. It's going to be a kick-ass time, the Innings Fest out here in Tempe, Arizona. So again, inningsfestival.com/barstoolsports. Get it in ya.
Whew. Roger Clemens live in the flesh. I mean, that's a selling point right there. But Dallas, you did this interview, just you. So why don't you give us a little preview about what we're about to hear right now?
Yeah. So we are, we're chilling in the Bat Cave with my boys from Birdman Bat Crew. Was able to do a nice little behind the scenes, how the sausage is made type deal. And, they were kind enough to sit down after the fact and chop it up with your boys. So without further ado, the Birdman Bat Crew.
Yeah, all right. Sorry. Welcome back to a special edition of the Starting Nine podcast. I am your host, Dallas Braden, joined by the men from Birdman Bat Company out here in San Francisco. Gary, Cody, gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for joining us. I gotta admit, I feel a little special talking into a microphone.
Right? Super fucking official.
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah, well, let's just get out of the way right now. Just because the mics are in our hands, F-bombs, they have wings too. They can fly here as freely as the bats do.
Okay.
So just
so no that. FCC pushing buttons.
No, absolutely not. No bleeping involved here, boys. No, let your hair down. We're talking Woodies, gentlemen. We're talking Woodies.
Very intimate. I like it.
First, I got to say, showing up here, I had no idea what to expect. Warehouse, I think you assume that. You're not really sure what the digs are going to be like, but the minute that I entered the establishment, the smell of wood punched me right across the face. It was kind of like getting that mushroom tip slap, or you know what I mean. Saying I could smell, I could get it. How did you pick this location? How did you pick San Francisco? You're from here. You're around this area.
I've lived here the past 10 years. Cody grew up here in Half Moon Bay, and honestly, this location picked us. I had been talking for a long time about how I wanted a warehouse, and a friend of a friend just so happened to come by our house one night and overhear me say, I need a warehouse. And he says, hey, I don't know you, but I have a warehouse.
Wait, he's not asking questions like, are you hiding bodies?
Not
like,
to mention, did he offer up his friendship and a warehouse, but his name is David Ortiz.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's been a great friend. This
large
is about
father.
5 years. And it took me a while prodding them. You know, this is a lot, bringing all this dust and all this in here. And this space back here was dead. My brother and I actually recorded an album in here. And it was blanketed in the walls and microphones everywhere and band equipment. And it was like a big recording studio back here, all cutty hiding. And we cut an album with Lars Anderson, actually, our
sure,
other founder.
Sure.
And I said, David, you know, we're done with the album now. How about putting that back company in here? And he was open to it and let us come in here at a very affordable rate in the beginning and worked with us, and they've been great. I don't think we'd be doing what we're doing if it wasn't for finding them the way we did.
Well, no, you gotta make friends in this world. You gotta make friends in this game, and that obviously helps. So you found your location. That's one thing. How in the hell do you arrive at, you know, law school? I don't know if I want to be a public defender. I don't know about the DA's office. I don't know how that wheel, the wheel of justice, they turn pretty slowly. Fuck it, I'll go make baseball bats. Like, how does that happen? Because for me, that's like, I don't know, that's like putting the microphone down or ditching the baseball glove and going, you know what? I like tambourines and the way they sound. I think I'm going to go do that.
Well,
it's just not an easy transition.
I don't think I would have even finished college if not for my parents like really pushing me. I always wanted to just do my own thing, not be like in the corporate structure. I was a good student, but school just weighed on me. I did what I had to get through. I got good grades. I went to class. I got my degree. And then for some reason after that, I decided to go to law school. And after a little like half a year there, I was like, this
over
is
it.
No more. Yeah,
too slimy for you?
Too many lawyers. Too expensive. The weird competitive nature. Like, I'm not making friends that I feel good about.
No.
So I said, I'm dropping out and moving to California.
Sure.
And then as I got here, the first thing I did is go on Craigslist and find a baseball league to make some friends.
You weren't looking for anybody that was passing out massages for 300 roses?
At that time.
Fair enough.
But fair enough. Yeah, good question. And that's how I made my friends when I lived in Los Angeles and when I moved here to San Francisco. At all times throughout my life, in my later adulthood, all friends have been made through baseball.
That's incredibly... I don't know if refreshing to hear is the right way to put that, but I know and I have such an appreciation for the game of baseball because of what it has lended to me, what it has afforded me to do. I mean, here I am talking to you dudes about fulfilling lifelong dreams. So, Coach, for you, like, how did that bug bite you? How did that itch start to come about for you as well? Were you kind of roped into this with Gary? Gary's like, hey, fucker, we're making bats.
No, I wouldn't say roped in. I mean, Gary came out, I believe, in 2011 and 12. We both played at City College of San Francisco. Gary had a successful adult league, which, you know, so he had some confidence going into falls, and he tried to give college ball a shot. And honestly, it was pretty refreshing because, you know, I was the older guy on the team.
Sure.
And usually it's a bunch of 18-year-olds that are kind of hard to wrangle, and it was here comes a 30-year-old that knew more than I did. So
Cody was old at 20.
Old soul at 20.
You do have that old soul about you.
Yeah. So he came along, and we kind of clicked right away, you know, just like through everything else. You know, if you like the people you go to battle with on the field, then you're probably going to hang out with them outside of the field. So we did, and we kept in touch even through after I graduated, moved back, and he was still kind of making them by hand for fun for Lars, his brother, Lars's teammates, like guys like Kyle Farmer, Cody Bellinger were giving us a call.
Oh, Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, just he might ring a bell.
Double-A drillers. Cody Bellinger.
Before
he was the man he is
the
now.
The Tulsa Drillers?
Yeah.
The NL Roy.
Yeah, the whole driller squad using the bats super illegally in 2016 and 15. And 15, it kind of like got through the radar, but in 16, when Ryan Garko, the coach, started tweeting pictures of Birdman, the league rained down on us. It rained assist letters. And,
Ryan Garko, the head coach of University of Pacific baseball team.
He was the skip of the drillers that year. And he went on now to do the college thing, huh?
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I made him the Garcon 5000. It was this like fat fungo. He wanted a meaty fungo to hit bombs with. And he really took to it. It was pretty funny.
Gark still has that.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love so
that fungo's never breaking, I promise.
No, God, no. Absolutely. So how do you go about that? Getting yourself into the game, sort of that foot in the door issue. I got to rewind though. Were you good ball players? Decent ball players? Okay ball players? Like, you're making bats. You had to have some familiarity with the bat, right?
I was the best baseball player my T-ball league ever saw.
Ever.
Like Al Bundy, I hit 5 home runs in one game on Beta Video somewhere. Just hit it real far and run.
Cody?
I really like to play. I was riddled with injuries. I'm a huge guy, 6'5". Probably should have done something a little bit more with my
built career. Like a brick shit house.
Yeah, there you go.
Goose Gossage just referred to a couple of weeks ago to a group full of fantasy baseball campers as the largest waste and collection of human semen he's ever been around.
I wouldn't give myself a waste of semen.
Okay. No,
You know, I'd say I have a decent, like, maybe half a gene in there.
Okay.
But, no, I just had a bunch of injuries like yourself, a torn shoulder, you know, it sucks. Torn hip, you know.
I know how it feels to not be able to wipe yourself without tearing something.
So, yeah, right. Same here. I guess we've all had that shoulder reconstruction, all three of us.
Hashtag reconstruction
brothers. We went through the rehab together.
The reason I asked is because somebody with the familiarity of the baseball bat, sure, you're a good player, that seems like a natural transition. So I just kind of wondered, have you guys ever given any thought to maybe making benches instead of bats?
Well, I think mostly they're made out of metal, wouldn't you say? Aluminum?
Never spent much time on him, Cody. Sorry, Alice. I don't know what the bench felt like.
I'm pretty sure you were on it.
I thought you threw every fourth day. What about those other days?
No, I was dabbling in the clubhouse.
Busy training.
Exactly.
Training.
Getting rubbed down.
Vitamins. On the elliptical.
Taking care of other guys' wood. That's what I learned how to do then, and I wasn't even prepared for it. Now here we are. As you find yourself entering into the business, you talk about sort of that rogue approach, guys using the bats illegally, if you will. What does that mean? And what did you have to have as far as a conversation with yourself to say, you know what? No, fuck it. This is how we're going to do it. We're rolling it out like this.
No press is good press, I think.
Basically, it was just I didn't have a choice because Lars Anderson, we started a band together with my brother, and Lars had never played drums, but played guitar his whole life with his dad and stuff. And we're like, Lars, you're going to play drums and we're going to get gigs. And we did. Played all whole off season all around San Francisco. Awesome. And he even said, and him and Ryan Kalish said that we that box truck, I think you saw it out front, we used to put a couch in there and take it to our gigs.
Oh.
And those guys said, like, partying in a box truck and having fans like glued to you on stage when you're playing music was cooler than playing in the big leagues. Like, they were more into the music than they were into playing in the big leagues.
It's insane. As when we have this conversation all the time, as baseball players, we want to be the entertainer. Like, we want to go to the concert and we want to be on stage and we want to be that dude, right? Like, we want 40,000 people at our feet screaming, looking up at us. And I think it's lost on us at times that, hey, man, that's kind of what's happening when you're out there on the field. But there's such a difference because the fan is tied to the artistry, the production of one's soul. And as baseball players, we do feel like what we're doing on a day-in, day-out basis, on the base path, in the outfield or infield, on the mound, in the batter's box, that is our soul being poured into the effort. So it's always been kind of crazy how there's a contrast, but still very, very, very parallel existence between the athlete and the entertainer. So that's always crazy for me to hear. Gary, you've had some opportunities to travel thanks to the game of baseball, thanks to Birdman. Enlighten the folks about your journey over to Japan with one Manny Ramirez.
Well, that was an interesting story. I met Manny over the phone in 2014 when Lars was with the Cubs. Manny saw one of the Birdman bats in his locker. I was like, what's this? You know, does this look so different with the colorful illegal logo?
Sure.
And we start talking on the phone. I sent in some bats, but like that was about it at that point. And I knew that Manny was playing with Lars on the team in Japan. So I went out there. I brought him a bat all ready to meet him, all excited. And I still remember the very first moment I met him when he like walked into this training room at the stadium in Kochi. And he knew who I was. I knew who he was. We gave each other a hug. And we immediately got in the van and took this really long ride in the rain to a game that was ultimately rained out. And on the way, for some reason, he asked me if I could help him hit like Donaldson. That was the exact, Birdman, you think you can help me hit like Donaldson? And I was like, sure. You know, like, I'm not scared. Let's talk about hitting. I love talking about hitting. So he showed me some of his swings. He's always trying to get better at all times, even at 45. And I didn't like, he was like pinching his knees and his bottom half looked different. And he did have this knee thing going on, so maybe he was compensating, but I was like, I want to change your stance, like in the bottom side. He said, all right, well, when we get there, we'll work. As soon as we got there, sure as shit, we got to work. And I was doing flips with him, doing phantom setups, doing all these imagining and visualizing. And that night, he hits a home run.
Yeah.
And comes out. I remember telling Lars, I felt like David Ortiz. Like we went and met each other in the tunnel and we're like shimmying after each other and like did this big chest bump and it was like this magical moment. And the next day he brought me a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue Label. And he's like, you're my help. You're helping me from now on. And I stayed there. I got to stay in an apartment with him. We shared this little apartment on the 20th floor in Kochi. And I trained with him from 6 a.m. when he'd wake me up every morning for yoga, like through the day. We'd take a little nap, and then we'd go to the cages and hit off the Japanese pitchers on the little machine, and it was quite a ride. I'll never forget.
So you go from law school dropout, law school flunky, to Manny Ramirez, personal hitting guru, in a matter of what, years?
Yeah,
that is what this game can do for you, right? And not just as a fan of it. but you're a part of this business. You're a part of this world. You're a part of the baseball family now. What does it mean for you guys to have the support of a guy like Manny Ramirez, the support of guys like Lars Anderson, Ryan Kalish, guys that have strapped it on at the big league level, have identified what you do and how you do it, and are like, you know what, man? I'm on board with that. How good does that feel?
It feels great. I mean, for one, it gives us just instant validity. I mean, we walk into a clubhouse with Lars, especially when we walked in last spring to the Dodgers clubhouse with Lars. You know, half the clubhouse, first of all, knew Lars and who he was. And two, I mean, a ball player like yourself probably knows what a ball player looks like or whom he looks like. I'm sure there's other representatives from other equipment or anything else that probably you look at them and you might even just walk right past them because you're like, that person probably has never even looked at a baseball, thrown a baseball, or didn't know what it's like looks like.
You know what you're doing with that thing?
Yeah, exactly. So I think with them, it definitely gives us a good validation and a good, you know, good backing.
What has been the, or have you had, and I ask players this a lot when we have them on the podcast, what their aha moment was in the big leagues, like, oh shit, I'm here. I'm wearing a big league uniform. I'm on a big league baseball field. I'm facing big league ball players. What was your aha moment? And I mean, when you realize, you know what, man? We're fucking living the dream right now. We are living the dream. Whether it was a deal that was solidified, maybe it was a big leaguer that you were finally able to add to the roster. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No, you know, no mountain too high, no valley too low, because anything can motivate an individual. I'm really interested. What was it?
Well, I'd have to say Yasiel Puig.
Puig!
You know, it was a really cool story. It's like really cheesy even. But I was invited to a game. Dodgers were coming up to play the Giants second week of the season. First home set of the year. And an old high school friend, a childhood friend, invited me to the game. We're five rows behind home plate. And 2 hours before the game, I dropped three bats off for Yasiel Puig before the game. And, you know, it's before the game, a fresh bat. I was like, hey, he's probably going to want to take some BP with it. I'm not expecting him to use it. Players are crazy. They like to use their own equipment. And sure enough, I go in there, settle in my seat, and 10 feet away from me, I see this monster with the 66 number on it and a shiny reflective Birdman that's blinding me. And I'm sitting there, like, palm sweaty, like, oh, my God, I'm so nervous. He's about to break this bat, and we're done. He's breaking it, and we're done. And I swear, I was like, to this day, I was like, there's no way, Yasiel. I was way more nervous than he was that day. And I think that is, like, the only time ever. When he was in the World Series using our bat, I think we felt that same tension.
Sure. Big stage.
And we got an RBI and a base knock up the middle, so that was good. And that game, he went 2 for 5, and, you know, we took off from there, all bird puns intended.
We. I love the that's not lost on me, the usage of we, because it's a team effort.
Yeah.
This is a team effort. It's a family effort with you guys.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In terms of seeking out individuals, is there a type of player that you like to attach yourselves to, or that you're looking to draw interest from, or are you just all about creating a product that individuals hopefully can fall in love with and use at their leisure, or are you, because in the boutique industry there's people who like to sort of aim for a demographic, right? Mm-hmm. We're targeting this demo, who these are. Well, baseball, pretty general. But is there any thought to putting a face to the franchise, or are you happy with being able to give anybody whatever they like?
Well, I think that the brand is a little polarizing. We've gotten that from the beginning. Some people love it, some people hate it, and then people do fall in the middle. And people ultimately appreciate the quality and the craftsmanship if they don't like the brand in some ways. So we kind of do pull from a lot of areas, but I think we shoot for those that like to play with a certain passion on the field, people that like to have fun, people that like to joke around, people that like to be friends with all their teammates and not kind of just stick to themselves and be individuals, that whole I versus we thing.
Sure.
We're all about the we side and all about expressing yourself and playing this game that we loved when we were little kids, like that T-ball story I was telling.
Yeah.
You know, like going out there and giving zero fucks and having lots of fun.
That's the way the game should be played, and I am so excited to see the ability of our players now to reflect that. You know, we're talking about the cleats the you know the cleat changes during Players Weekend, the jersey during Players Weekend. They're putting the nicknames on it. They just had the rule come across, that says players are going to be able to put essentially whatever they want on their cleats moving forward, which is a big deal, especially for a guy like me coming from the Oakland A's organization. Mandatory
white.
67% white or whatever it was, whatever it is. So I think that's probably still going to be a rule. And honestly, that's a fucking cool rule. So I'm not complaining.
Pretty fresh. Yeah, I mean, everyone knows like white cleats.
Yeah.
A's unis are really fresh.
It's the only.
Drip it.
Yeah.
We're fans. Drip so maybe it. We're biased, but.
Yeah, that's part of it.
They're very unique. Think about it. How many people have a green uniform?
Well, some of the crispiest colors. I'll tell you right now. One of the crispier uniforms in the game, I thought, was the Texas. Well, I thought was the Texas Rangers, just because it's they're red jersey. It's red, vibrant, white and blue. You know, the minute that I put on that white uniform with the green and gold popping across the chest, it takes a lot of work to make me look below average, and I felt like I was a fucking dime. Walking around town.
I love it. Yeah,
in that union. An absolute dime. You mentioned the freedom of expression. You mentioned the colorfulness and the character aspect of the game and the players that you are attracted to. Where in the fuck did this Birdman logo come from? What in the actual hell is this? Sorry about whoever failed art class. We can start there.
My goofy brother, man, ever since he was a little kid, he's 10 years younger than me and has always been this baseball phenom, this little string bean who was always better than everybody around him. And he just drew these otherworldly drawings, like whole notebooks full of them. He still does. Last night I saw him doodling all over. He has these books full of it. And he got a ride to play down in Georgia for SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design, and started out as an illustrator. And for his class, he created that Birdman, colored it in, and made a project out of it. And he emailed me like all these drawings that he like took from his doodle book and like made, colored, and illustrated and all that. And that one resonated with me. He was struggling, not getting a lot of hits. They had him in the 3-hole, and the 4-hole, and the 5-hole, and the 7-hole, and the 9-hole. My dad's calling me. Everyone's panicking. He's struggling. And the season was wrapping up, and I had found that sticker, that picture, and I made like one of those print home stickers. I literally like scissored it out and put it on a bat I made for him for his summer league. And he really turned it around at that point, actually. He came back, and he was like the player that we had wanted him to be, including himself. And his teammates, my friends, other people, and like, man, I never saw anything like this.
Right.
And it's that's quite interesting. And the whole idea was to look at it and laugh. You know, you're playing a kid's game, right? It's like, if you're stressed, if you're stiff, and you got 90-plus coming at you, you're done, you know?
That was something reading up on Birdman and the history of the company and you guys, that was something that really resonated with me was, one, the passion and the support that your brother was receiving, but two, the wherewithal to acknowledge, even at that pivotal point in time in his life, in your life, in a career, that this game is supposed to be fun, and oh my God, what a mindset can do for an individual during competition. So he looks down at this dumbass drawing that he just doodled and whatever forgot about. You find it. You figure out a way to make this a point of focus and a point of motivation. And I don't want to say the rest is history, but for me, just listening to the story and having the opportunity to meet everybody around here, like that is as emblematic of a group of people and a dream as I think I've ever really come across and I've ever seen. So that really kind of hit me in the feels, man, because I understand how mental this game can be. So just to see the guys who are responsible for trying to put good wood in the hands of individuals who need good mindsets, there's a lot of synergy here, more so than just shaping up a fucking bat.
Yeah, a lot of bat companies have like a town name, someone's like last name. They want to egotistically put their name on it or something. I mean, I made this. But we care about the player.
Right.
We want you to feel something when you pick up a Birdman bat. And I think that resonates. You feel that a couple guys made this. They put a lot of work and heart and soul into it. And it's lighthearted, so it just makes you relax. And think that like, wow, I'm going to go hit better than I ever did today because I just got this. What is this thing?
All right. I want to have a little fun. I want to ask some lighthearted questions here. These are things that I just I needed answers to when I think about what goes into making this kind of product here. We talked about Puig earlier. You and I were chopping it up, Code. And obviously, Lars been known for a blow-up or two, a tomahawk chuck of a bat, if you will. Tell me you shed real passionate tears when you see these bats blow up and break and crack or thrown. Like, is there a group that meets on Wednesdays with bad coffee and stale donuts to talk about all the bats that you guys see getting thrown against walls and shit? Or?
Yeah, it's I definitely shed a tear. I remember when Puig first did it, and I got videos from friends and from him, and like I was at my other job, and I just see the bat snapping over his leg, and I just like, you know, you want to be upset, and I think I did cry, definitely internally. I cried, you know, but after that, and you know, the next day, lo and behold, you know, on MLB's official Instagram and on the, you know, front page of the LA Times is our logo across his knee. So, and then it was hard to be upset.
Right.
And then so he did it again in the World Series, same story. But, you know, thousands and millions of people are looking at that logo. So I can't be too mad at the guy.
So Puig, swinging good wood, breaks it, you go flaccid. You see your logo on the front page, and immediately your energy erected once again.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've seen those Sour Patch Kids commercials? Sour and then they're sweet? Yep. That's exactly what happened.
Just a big old SPK.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right. How quick can you get it up? Start to finish, how quick can you get it up? The bat, how quick can you get the bat up from raw material to the lathe?
You saw it today. It took us a couple minutes. 6-7 minutes, I'd say, total.
So after you blow through the first one, what's your reboot time like?
I had a quick Gatorade, and then we got 3 more minutes of pump and run.
Jesus. It's incredible.
No time wasted. None.
Most popular model. I know there's a lot of different offerings out there when it comes to, usage, protection, things of that nature. Do you have a specific model that you guys like to take into action with you?
The truck stop. That's what we use. It has a funny knob that's kind of like an axe, but it's round, so okay. You can spin it around, but it has no like prominent knob.
Right. It's a beautiful taper. Yeah, if I may say so myself.
It doesn't worm its way in your hand or break your hammy bone or make you sting as much. And you can choke up on it easy, you can choke down on it easy, and it's just nice and comfortable.
So you can work your way. There's zero interference in terms of working your way up and down the knob.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Zero restriction.
Streamline.
Perfect. That's what you want. You don't want any rigidity, any bumps. I mean,
and I used to just make those for myself, all the way back to the very beginning of the hand turnings. And I think I showed you one earlier. And people just took to them. People really like that knob.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the, if I remember correctly, kind of similar to the knob that won Barry Lamar Bonds.
Yeah, he used a big bell also. Yep, and guys you'll see all the time will be taping it to look like that. So we actually just made it like that.
Yeah, it's being ahead of the game. Why
absolutely.
Don't we just cut out the middleman?
Sure.
Cut out the tape. Do you guys make a launch angle bat?
Everyone. So we make a knob sticker that has a banana hitting at a launch angle up. And then we also want to make a rocket ship talking about launch angle as another knob sticker. Because launch angle is prominent. But we always like to say it's not about swinging up. It's more about, you know, getting underneath it and getting your legs underneath you. Because, I mean, we hear, you know, guys like A-Rod talking about him swinging down, but then you look at videos of him going 450 feet the other way. It's like, at no point did you ever drop down. You just had massive tree trunks of legs. It's like, let's be real here.
Yeah, you got to get into it, get underneath it, create some leverage, and as we like to say, you get both butt cheeks into it. That's when you know you're really creating some leverage. Have you ever made a bat? Have you ever been petitioned, or not petitioned, excuse me, have you ever been commissioned by a pitcher to make bats with holes in them?
No.
I feel like that's something, there's a market for that. You guys just kick the tires on that in spring training. Check in with the pitchers.
Put like some drilled holes underneath the sticker. I like it.
We can make you a special Swiss cheese model if you'd like.
Yeah, it's just something that I think
maybe we'll like promote airflow and make bats.
We could sell it that way. Right, yeah. We could sell it that way. I'm here for it. I'm
aerodynamics, hopeful. That's a big thing these days.
Yes. We might have touched on this in the video, but for the folks who might not have listened or heard it or saw it or downloaded it, which they will, don't doubt that. Who's got the biggest wood that you guys have ever put your hands on?
The biggest girth? Are we talking girth or length?
Oh,
that's always the best question.
Who's the biggest combo? Girthy, lengthy, you just man wood.
I'd have to say Hunter Pence. I mean, he swings an absolute log.
Said that. Yeah Hunter. Yeah. Is that?
Absolute log. 34 and a half. Right. Massive barrel. Low density maple. Completely illegal to anyone that's been in the league after 2011. So pretty much he's one of the only guys that can use it. And he has special training for it, I guess, you know?
Wow. Hard wood.
Yeah.
Log.
Extremely hard wood. Did you frame your first bat, kind of like how folks frame their first dollar that they make? Did you frame your first bat like, hey, Puig wants these. All right, we've made them for Puig. And then you go to, this one's going to be mine, though. I'm going to put this in.
So I'm kind of mad at myself. That original one that I made for my brother, I have photos of it, and it lasted for like 2-3 summers. But somehow it eluded all of us. None of us can remember it even breaking. Maybe it just shot off into outer space and is in orbit somewhere. I like to think that at least. But one of the ones I made for Manny Ramirez in 2014 is on my wall, and that is one that I enshrined from the very beginning. And then also being a big Philadelphia sports fan, I got to do a workout with Chase Utley and make him a bat and get him to sign it. So that one's on the wall too. That was a couple years. That was years back. So yeah, it was like my It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia moment. The Mac.
Yeah,
it was like my Mac moment.
He is totally like, Mac.
Chase, I never do this, but did I get a picture and an autograph?
He's
like, here it is. Always people.
Oh,
man.
How do we do this?
Yeah,
how do we do this?
So it was really cool. It was an awesome experience.
All right, the last question that we like to ask all of our guests is, if you could go back into time in baseball history, to any single moment and witness, what would it be and why?
Ricky Henderson, the stolen base, I'm the greatest speech. I'm the greatest of all time. Because I've been an Oakland A's fan my whole life. I met Ricky on a couple of different occasions, and Ricky loves talking about Ricky.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Ricky's the man.
But he is actually a really nice guy. He would love to talk to you. And I would have just loved to go to that moment. My dad was at that game and said it was really, really awesome. And I that speech just gives me chills. Like, you know, on that day, and they go back, I think they did, NBC did a recent documentary on it, and he was right. On that day, you can't take it from him. He is the greatest. So
Ricky still got a Porsche with 939 on the license plate. Just know that.
And he embodies that playful spirit, popping his chain, having fun, believing in himself, all that. That all kind of falls in suit with what.
No doubt. What about you, G?
I'm going to take it back a little further. My dad grew up around New York, big Yankees fan. I am not. But I think that if I was around watching Mantle and Maris duke it out for that home run record that year. I mean, the movies make it look so awesome.
Right.
The way America was just eyes on baseball.
Glued to it.
Those guys were the biggest movie stars of the time, right? They were just everything. And baseball was larger than life back then, and I think that I would shit to be able to see that.
You know what? I don't think we've ever had – well, I know we've never had the Ricky answer, and I know we've never had – that answer, the Mantle Maris race answer. We've had a lot of the summer of 98 answers, McGuire and Sosa. We've had a lot of that. Never had either one of those. Outstanding. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for opening up the doors and allowing me to flap my wings inside the Birdman nest, inside the Bat Cave. I've had a fucking blast. The bat is beautiful. It's not here with me. It was making a lot of loud noise. We got a video of that we'll be dropping on that ass, so stay tuned for that. But Gary, my friend, much appreciated. Code.
Thanks, Dallas.
Thanks for all the love and
thank you.
And the love and attention to my wood that you boys paid today.
Come back anytime. Take some hacks.
Talk about feeling soft hands. Amazing. Birdman crew. We out. Cool. Special thanks to the boys from the Birdman Batcave, Carrabas.
Yeah.
You have got to get over there.
I mean, that's on you. I'm the one that's flying across the country to be in Oakland for in April.
Well, that's a done deal. Put it like this. It's a stone's throw from the airport in San Francisco. It took me like 10 minutes to get from the airport to the Bat Cave. And before you know it, I was smelling lumber, licking wood, and just, I mean,
I did see that, by the way. What did they do with that bat when you licked it? Like, they obviously can't put that back in circulation. What did they do with it?
That was my bat.
Oh, okay. So they made you a bat.
Yeah, they made like, and for the listeners, check out the teaser video on Instagram. I actually posted that a little while ago on the Starting Nine account.
You do that all by yourself, Dallas.
But there's going to be a – yeah, and Starting Nine is a little slow to the table in terms of YouTube channels. So your boy DB took it upon himself to create his own. So I'm going to go ahead and be pumping out the full behind-the-scenes video. It's the full-scale interview from the minute that we showed up. Had the conversations. They took us behind the scenes. We see the videos. You see the bat getting picked out. You see the bat getting whittled down. You see him engraving everything. We talk about the selection of the wood and the who's, what's, when, where's, why's, inspiration behind it all. So that video will be getting posted, and there will be a link sent to that YouTube channel as well for your pleasure.
Sweet. I mean, I'd love to have a fucking – I actually have you know what I want to do? I want to build like a bat rack for my apartment. I don't want one of those things where you can just like hang them on the wall and shit. I want like a bat rack that they would have in the dugout. I probably have like 7 bats over there in the corner. One of them is actually a Starting Nine bat.
Are you familiar with what bat racks look like in dugouts?
Are you trying to say that I didn't play organized baseball, Dallas?
I'm trying to tell you that bat racks don't exist in Major League dugouts.
That's not true.
Yeah, that is. That's true. Yeah, they have bins. They have bat bins, Jared.
Oh, yeah. Let's go on the semantics route. A bat rack is a bat rack.
Well, there's no bats. Put it like this. There's no bats hanging in a major league dugout.
That's not a bat rack. Anyways, this is.
You got me a gun rack.
Yeah.
Right.
What am I going to do?
A gun. With let a gun alone. Rack. Mini guns that would necessitate a rack. If you're not careful, you're going to lose me, Wayne.
With a gun rack. Did we date you there, Jared?
Yeah, I don't know what that's from.
Wayne's World, dude.
Oh, really?
Game on.
Yeah.
I've seen Wayne's World. Postmates! Other than your absolute best friends, who could you ask to bring you red wine at 4 p.m., sushi at 9 p.m., and a breakfast burrito at 8 a.m.? The answer to that question, it's Postmates. Postmates is your personal food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever you can think of delivery service all year round. No more trips to the store. You don't even have to know where the store is. Postmates will deliver anything to you. Download the app for iOS or Android for free. Browse local restaurants and businesses and track your delivery 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Postmates will bring you what you want within the hour. Wow. Anything you're craving, Postmates can deliver. They're the largest on-demand network in the known universe with more than 25,000 partner merchants. For a limited time, Postmates is giving the grounds crew, our listeners, $100 of free delivery credit.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Postmates is giving the grounds crew $100 of free credit. Free delivery credit. Free delivery credit. For your first 7 days, you get a week, download that app. To start your free deliveries, download the app right now and use the promo code STARTING9. It's pretty simple. Promo code STARTING9 for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Get anything you need anytime you need it. Download Postmates and save with the code STARTING9. That's like, I'm going to do that.
Yeah. The hundo that caught me by surprise.
Nice little fucking hundo spot there from Postmates. Promo code STARTING9. I don't know how much stock you put into World Series odds, either of you. I find them interesting. I think for the time of the year that they come out, which, by the way, these used to mean something around pitchers and catchers because teams were like formed by then.
Yeah.
I mean, the balance of power, especially in a division like the NL East, it can shift drastically based on where Manny Machado and Bryce Harper sign. But as of right now, the New York Yankees are the favorites to win the World Series, which makes a ton of sense because they won 8 fewer games with the Red Sox, brought back the same exact team, and so did the Red Sox minus Craig Kimbrel. So it would make sense that they're now better than them.
Yeah, that's not a that's probably got a stick in your craw as a Red Sox fan, huh?
No, because I mean, we still have opening day with the rings and the whole deal. We still get to actually do that. The Yankees are back-to-back off-season champs. No one has been talking about the fact that they are back-to-back off-season champs, even more so if they sign Manny Machado. Obviously, you know, it's cool to win the World Series, but no one is giving the Yankees credit for being back-to-back off-season champs.
Well, you know, they're so used to getting the accolades, Krobs. They don't need everybody patting them on the back these days.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, Jay, by all means.
I was just going to say that there are two odds among relevant teams that jump out right off the page to me as being just absolutely tasty.
Yeah. Like really good, like you like
yes.
them?
Yes, like if one were to bet, these would be teams they might consider.
Hold on, can I guess?
Sure. Like, yeah, and how many of them do you? How many of them are you thinking of in your head, Jay?
Two. There are two teams, one from the AL and one from the NL. Like, don't go. Like, we're not. I'm not talking about. Hey, I like the Marlins at 150 to one. Like,
yeah. We're gonna nail this right now, Carabas.
Okay. One AL, one NL.
You got one AL, one NL team that you're citing as like big time value.
Great value.
Great. To win the World Series or make the playoffs?
These are World Series.
No, these are – so.
Okay. I'm assuming one of them has to be the Nationals at 16-1.
Ding, ding, ding.
Well, fuck. See, I was going to say the Braves at 16-1, but I like, obviously, the addition of Corbin, the Nats, fair
big
enough.
Time, yeah, and then they could still get Harper back, and in theory, we don't know. And your American League team, the A's being 33-1 is kind of crazy, but they're not going to be the same exact. What about the Rays at 33-1?
I think those are good odds. That's not who I'm looking at, though.
Well, okay. In the NL, like who?
No, it's the Nats. The Nats was my NL pick. The AL one is the Tribe. 16-1 for a team that
in the Central.
Yeah, they basically like. I'm not saying that it's impossible any other team wins that division, but they probably have
the easiest road.
Yeah, the easiest path to a division title and a guaranteed spot in the playoffs. I mean, I think that alone is worth more than they're being given credit for here.
Because it's a, like, are they essentially one of the only teams that we look at and are just like, yep, we'll see you in October.
Yeah, like, I don't understand. Like, I know it's not necessarily based entirely off this. They're trying to encourage action, but there's no possible way that the Phillies are actually 10-1 and the Indians are 16-1. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and
the Phillies are demonstrably worse. They were worse last year, and there's no reason for us to think that they would be, like, 12 games better than they were last year compared to the Indians.
Right, and I've been vocal about the Minnesota Twins and how excited I think I am for them this year. Look, you go and extend Kepler, who I thought was going to – who I'm looking to have a big breakout year, especially with the addition of Nelly. Polanco as well gets extended. So now you're like, all right, we're starting to put some guys as, you know, tensions at ease, starting to put their minds at ease, letting them go out and play the game. But aside from that, the Cleveland Indians are in a division full of teams that are trying to throw losses at their fans. Like, they're actively throwing L's at people that are buying tickets. Like Tigers, White Sox, Royals, they're just throwing losses at the fans. Boom, boom, here, fucking eat this. Here's an L. And that's who the Indians are battling against for the majority of their season.
So just to be clear, the top five are the Yankees, Red Sox, Astros, Dodgers. I think all four of those make a lot of sense. The Phillies at 10-1 as the fifth highest team is the first team that jumps off the page as being a little out of place to me. The other one that I think is interesting, and I want to get your guys' opinion on, are both. I know there's some anticipated move baked into this, but the White Sox at 33-1 and the Reds at 33-1. Like, the Reds might be the fourth best team in their own division.
Yeah, and why are they even that close?
Yeah, it's just tough. Like, that's I love that they've made moves to win, as opposed to, like, say, the Pirates, who have done essentially nothing this offseason. But you know, putting the Reds and the Athletics and the Rays in the same category just strikes me as interesting.
Well, and the other thing about this stuff that is so difficult to project, especially in baseball, is there's a very solid chance that three guys that are not on any one of these teams here will be on one of those teams in the postseason.
Yeah.
Via a trade, whatever, or minor league production. You've got somebody emerging from the minor leagues. So to have the New York Yankees, the Red Sox, the Astros, the Dodgers, that's understandable. The track records are what they are. For some of these other clubs, they not necessarily who they are today. That doesn't mean that's who they're going to be in August, in September. So, like, this odd stuff in baseball is just, I mean, I take this shit with a grain of salt.
Fair enough. It is February.
It is February. Right. It's also surprising, like you said, the Reds being 33-1 and then the Rays being 33-1 when they're coming off a 90-win season. And even the A's falling to like 33-1 after the year they had as well.
But so do you see, but I mean, you know, but the Rays, look at their path to the postseason. Like, you're going to have to beat 200 plus win teams.
Maybe three.
Just to win the division. That's to win the division. Like, we need 10 more W's out of you guys to be considered to win the division. That's just to be in the conversation, all right? That's what that means. So that's why, sure, are the Reds and the Rays two completely different clubs? Yeah, but are their odds necessarily that different when you think about their path to the brass ring? I don't. So, I mean, I understand the disparity in production that you might be expecting, but overall, like, the fuck, I don't have the Rays beating the Yankees or the Red Sox getting into the postseason. I just don't. Sorry.
You're playing the role of Jay Hay this week with the scratchy mic, Dallas.
Oh, I'm sorry.
God damn it.
All right, I'm back.
Okay. Those are the main takeaways there. I mean, the Giants being 66-1, that's tough.
Especially did you guys have Baltimore at 250-1?
It's a little aggressive, I think.
They should be 5,000-1. That's tough. That is tough. I mean, did you see Buster Posey's tweet being like, you know, I'm just thankful to be in an organization that's so committed to winning every single year. And it's like, dude, the Giants have been trash for like the last couple of years. And there's no light at the end of the tunnel right now, 2019.
Yeah. And there's not been a huge commitment to winning in that regard. Like, they haven't, you know, Andrew McCutchen and Evan Longoria. And that got everybody super excited, super excited. How'd that go?
Not great. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free, while other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started. You can start investing at any level.
Perfect.
Yeah. The simple design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of Starting Nine a free stock.
Free!
A free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up now at starting.robinhood.com. That is starting.robinhood.com.
Jared, I was kind of following along the read with you.
Yeah.
And I feel like you missed a couple words. Might have just been one word.
Intuitive.
Okay.
Yeah. I skipped over intuitive. I was just reading really fast. I know how to say that word.
Okay.
If I can't read a word, I will actually say it and say it incorrectly.
That's fair. That is fair.
Yeah, I was just reading.
I thought you were just trying to get slick and think that I wasn't going to catch you just fucking ducking out words that have more than one syllable.
No, I know how to say intuitive. That's for damn sure. Jay Hay!
Fuck, marry, kill. IHOP, Denny's, and Waffle House.
Easy. You marry Denny's. You marry Denny's because you can't take IHOP into a Denny's.
Isn't IHOP not even a thing anymore?
No, it is. It's a thing.
I thought they changed it to like...
No, that was just a gimmick. That was just a gimmick.
Jared
Christ. They were just trying to sell burgers, dude.
My God. See, for the folks that are listening, do you understand right now? I want you to take something away from that comment right there. Up until right now, Jared Carrabas has been living in a world where IHOB is a thing.
International. I mean,
And that's what we are dealing with here on a daily basis at Starting Nine.
I mean, that was a thing.
Dallas, your take is very bad.
No, it's not. No, it's not. What are you talking about?
You kill Denny's.
No, you don't. You marry Denny's because Denny's is the most respectable one out of the other two. You can't take an IHOP on a first date to Denny's, and you can't take a Waffle House on a first date to Denny's because there's a good chance that they're unhappy with their food. They're throwing shit around. There's a fight that's going to break out. Like if IHOP and Waffle House were dateable human beings, you can't take either one of them into a Denny's. That's what I'm getting at. No, so you marry Denny's because you know what you're getting there.
If you're taking your future wife to a Denny's, just end it.
No. And I kill IHOP because they don't know who they are. They're not comfortable with who they are. They're not comfortable in their own skin. I'm not on that train. And I'm fucking Waffle House because that is an absolute dynamo of a ride right there. Everything you've ever seen from a Waffle House, from chairs flying to patrons jumping over the counter to employees jumping over the counter, I'm fucking here for a Waffle House. You're walking into Waffle House, some shit's going down.
I respect the fuck Waffle House answer, but we got to flip the other two. Denny's is trash, okay, and you would never want to marry trash. IHOP is marginally better, and you know
what?
You say you don't want to marry somebody who doesn't know what they are. Let me spin that for you. I would want to marry somebody who isn't afraid to try new things.
Oh, and wow!
And to experiment a little bit, and to get out there and push their boundaries. Burgers, baby.
Wow. I do like that. I do like that logic, which is why I'm going to marry IHOP. There's a lot of sentimental value there.
Yes.
There's a lot of sentimental value there. It's like, you know, that's old reliable.
Did you just fall back in love now that you know they're IHOP again? Is that what happened?
Well, I mean, I like burgers too, so I would have married. I would have married IHOP.
I was on IHOP until I realized they're IHOP again. Now, yeah. Now I'm an IHOP guy, not an IHOP guy.
Yeah, I would have married them regardless. Denny's, you fuck Denny's because I mean that's like you said, they're just a wild time. So it's like you can handle it for a night, you can't handle it for a lifetime, you can't handle it for a few months in a relationship, and then Waffle House, I'm killing because I just have no. I have no experience with a Waffle House.
Wow. No experience with a Waffle House here?
No, none.
Man, it's a, that's a late night. Why am I awake? What am I doing here? And who are you sitting across from me?
Yeah, that's South Street Diner for me. That's go to South Street Diner with Mike Napoli at 3 o'clock in the morning, get some steak and eggs, and you don't know how to fucking use a fork. That's South Street Diner.
question for Starting Nine, presumably, because you are DMing the account of Starting Nine. I get it.
Yeah.
Can be unstated moving forward. Which young pitcher in the NL Central are you highest on this season? And which NL Central pitcher is poised for a breakout season? We're just going to combine that into one question. Which young emerging NL Central starting pitcher are you most bullish on for the 2019 season?
Jameson Taillon, let's go. Let's fucking go. He stared cancer in the face and shit all over that. Fuck you, cancer. Fuck. He could not, I mean... I've been high on this dude since he showed up. And I really think the Pittsburgh Pirate fan base needs something to be excited about, needs a dude that they could hang their hat on. And I believe Taillon is that guy.
Jared?
Does it have to be a starting pitcher? Because the first name that came to mind was a pitcher, but it was not a starting pitcher.
No, actually the question was which young pitcher. So feel free to answer accordingly.
Oh, okay. Great, because I am going with Jordan Hicks. I'm going with Jordan Hicks. I control an issue for this guy, but any time that you're talking about 104, 105 on the gun with movement, these are sinkers. These are not four-seam fastballs that he's throwing. Yeah, I'm going to be paying attention. Anytime that I'm looking at one of my five TVs here at the launching pad during baseball season and it's ready to time to close out a game in St. Louis. I will be paying attention to that game for that simple reason that Jordan Hicks is the guy that's getting the ball in the ninth.
Yeah. Do you realize, I mean, it's only about 30 miles an hour or so less, Jared, but like he almost throws quite literally twice as hard as you do.
That's not true at all.
That's incredible. Like,
does he throw, that's if he threw twice as hard as me, he'd throw like 150 miles an hour.
No, I said almost, right? So you take 68, you double that, it's
138. Is accurate. I will not let this slander be spoken on my own podcast.
Whatever it is. So
White Sox Dave, by the way, threw 69, which was tough to see after warming up and having a mound. I did not warm up and I threw off flat ground with a hangover. So we'll see. I mean, I know that I'll throw harder than him. If 72 is his max. And I threw 68 without warming up on flat ground. Give me a mound. Give me some warm-up pitches, and I'm blowing right past the guy that boasts throwing 91.
There has never been a sadder rivalry. the answer is Jack Flaherty.
Oh, I like it, J.A.
About 11 strikeouts per nine last year over 151 innings, 3.34 ERA. I think the ERA might go up a little bit. But I think, the strikeouts are going to remain. I think the walks might drop a little bit. But I think he might be the Cardinals ace as soon as the 2019 season, as far as that rotation goes on a per inning basis, especially with the news that Carlos Martinez, could be deployed out of the bullpen this year, which is an interesting story to watch in and of itself.
Yeah.
But good picks. I like your guys' picks too. They were pretty good. If you were, let's stick with pitching. If you were a new franchise and you had to pick one of these pitchers to build your rotation around for the next five seasons, who would you take and why? Blake Snell, the aforementioned Aaron Nola or Jose Berrios?
Give me the lefty. Give me the lefty. I'm going Blake Snell. Yes, because he's left-handed, first and foremost, and that's just why I'm making that decision. But seriously, I think when you take a look at the workload and the jump in efficiency, that is what I'm paying attention to. 129 in the third innings last year, 113 hits allowed. Excuse me, not last year, 2017. 2018, 180 and two-thirds innings pitched, one hit less allowed. And I know those are two very broad number categories to look at, but I'm just thinking about what goes in to finishing an at-bat, to executing a momentum inning in which your team scores, you come back out, you get three and get them back into the dugout. Those things are kind of what I extrapolate from those kinds of numbers. As broad as they are, I think about having to execute certain things to get to that point. And what I see in Blake Snell is just a further advancement of that. The Ks per nine skyrocketed. The walks per nine dropped. The whip is extremely sexual at sub one. The K to walk is damn near four or three and a half, four. Yeah, I love me some Snellzilla.
I'm going to actually agree with Dallas. And I think it's not just because he won the Cy Young Award last year, but the division in which he did it and the year in that division in which he did it. Yeah, you know, he was carving up some of the best lineups in baseball, you know, not to take anything away from what Nola did last year. But Blake Snell is, as they say, battle tested. And yeah, the lefty, being a lefty is obviously a big advantage when you're looking at a group like this, but it's, for me, it's what he did and who he did it against that makes him stand out.
Yeah, no, he was absolutely, I mean, he was filthy. Put it like this, Kravis, in four starts against your Bo Sox.
Yeah, it wasn't
1.0 ERA, 25 innings, 13 hits, 27 punch outs.
Yeah, that's a team that won 119 games.
Yeah, and the old where's Los Yankees at here? And the Yankees, he was the Yankees got to him. Fucking ERA north of six. So moving on from Blake Snell.
I think it's a toss up between Snell and Nola. I am gonna lean Nola ever so slightly though. I'm not sure I have any one thing to justify, because to me their future projections look pretty similar, at least for 2019 statistics. I don't know. I'm going to go Nola.
Fine.
Yeah. Instead of changing something, what are the aspects of baseball you each love most? One aspect per person. And whatever comes to mind.
This is also relevant because it is Valentine's Day, Dallas.
It is. Wow.
I love how the game changes from pitch to pitch. That aspect of the game is like, because if you understand, you know, you understand the numbers and the success rates between a 1-0 count and an 0-1 count, or how important a 1-1 pitch is and what those numbers look like if it's 2-1 as opposed to 1-2. Those little things, because I know the hitters know that and are thinking about that. I know that. You put a man on first base, and now that whole game that we're talking about just had another dimension added to it. So the nuance of baseball is one of the most important aspects of the game. And that's something that I love, because you can just stare at a game situation and come up with a story. And it's beautiful.
So here's the thing, right? I love everything about baseball. There's not a whole lot that I don't love. But when you watch that movie Fever Pitch, right? And they were like, you know, they're always there for you. They're there every night. Like, that's what it is. It's baseball season. I know that baseball is going to be there for me every day, every night until the season's over. It's not like, you know, hockey, there's some nights off. You know, there's football, you get a whole fucking week off. It's not like that. Baseball is every day. It's every night. It's constantly in your life if you want it. And that's why I love baseball, is because it's just always there. I can always consume it. It's one of those only sports where when you go to the game, there's that personal connection. It's not like, you know, you go to a football game, you get boozed up in the parking lot, you go into the game, you fucking scream. There's nothing wrong with that. Love a good tailgate, love a good football game. But the personal connection, you know, when you think back to like, oh, like my dad, my granddad, like all that other stuff, you think about like going to the baseball game. At least for me, that's what it is. And that's one of the many reasons why I love baseball.
Another great answer. Love both of you guys' answers. I agree. Lots of reasons to love baseball. I'm going to go with the fact that you never know when the most important moment of the game is going to occur.
Ooh.
And that to me is, I love basketball as a kid just as much as I love baseball, at least when I was a smaller kid. And I just love the fact that you tune into a baseball game from the start because the most important moment may very well take place in the first inning. And with basketball games and really most football games, you really can't say that. You can tune into an NBA game in the fourth quarter and get a satisfying experience. And in some ways, that's a good thing. But what I love about baseball is that I can sit there and there's a level of anxiety and an tenseness that I don't know when it's coming. So I always have to be like at least somewhat engaged in what I'm watching and taking in. And that's part of what I love about baseball.
I like it.
Three-part spring training question. As a fan for the Rocket, how should we view spring training? As a professional, I guess that's Dallas, how do you view spring training? And as an analyst, which is a generous term for me, how should we view spring training? This guy is an analyst first and a sports fan, and he says, hashtag stop East Coast bias. I don't know what that means, but anyway, how do we view spring training from these three perspectives?
It's strange. I think as from a fan's perspective, it's evolved over time. I remember when I was younger, it was almost like spring training was like it was almost like a comedy show. It was, is Manny going to show up on time this year? Is his grandmother going to die again this year and he's going to be late? It was always, you know, who's going to report late? Pedro was late sometimes. We had a bunch of divas back then. And then sort of as things evolved, it was almost like a car show. It's like, oh, Red Sox are unveiling these new guys that they just got. And they're always a team that they, you know, they're trying to make like a monster splash in the offseason. So it was cool. I always look forward to spring training to see that new big name in a Red Sox jersey for the first time in spring training. I remember Daisuke. Daisuke Matsuzaka has come up three times on this fucking podcast. He hasn't pitched in the big leagues in 10 years.
Get him off your brain.
When he signed with the Red Sox, there was more media at spring training than there was at most teams like opening day. It was insane. So there was that aspect of it. And now it's, you know, it's kind of a formality where I'm still excited. I don't do truck day, not a truck day guy. But when you think about spring training, it's like, all right, guys are doing baseball things. I'm happy about this, but I just can't wait to get to opening day. Now I just kind of like, I look past spring training where obviously there are storylines. There are still storylines, and that changes year to year. Sometimes it's more dramatic than other years, and that can be interesting. But a year like this year, for me, there's no big free agent splash. There's no big new name that came in via trade. There's no like drama. There's no, this guy is, you know, competing for this spot. There's really nothing happening. So for this year, I guess it is kind of year to year. I guess the appeal is that you never, it can always be different. So that's kind of what I look at for spring training.
And as a professional, you have been itching to get back, probably after a week or 2 weeks of downtime after the World Series, and you know, baseball is no more. It takes about a week, maybe two. And I mean, that's how I was anyway. And I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's get this going. But you're looking forward to getting back to seeing your buddies, to seeing your teammates. But every goal that you've set for yourself since you threw your last pitch, everything that you've been working on in the offseason, it's now time to take that foundation and continue to build upon it, knowing that you are one step closer to being able to achieve your ultimate goal, which is play baseball in October. But you know that this is a marathon and you know it's not a sprint. And so you're excited about the time that you have early on in spring to prepare yourself and prepare everybody around you for that long haul. I was just a big fan of the preparation side. I'm a big fan of process, even more so than I am production. I love the process, and that's what spring training represents. It gives you the opportunity to get back into your routines of, you know, eating, working out, lifting, running, video work, chart work, just all kind of stuff, you know, taking care of your body, the massages, the hyperbaric chambers, the hikes, the everything. It's spring training is like it's a toy box. It really is. You get to go jump in a toy box, and then you look up 2 weeks into spring and you're like, all right, give me the fuck out of here.
As an analyst, I guess, I would say, I'm looking at injuries, I'm looking at velocity increases, and I'm looking at batted ball changes. If a guy's hitting a lot more balls in the air, a lot of more balls are leaving the park, that could be something. If a guy's velocity is increased by 3 miles an hour on his fastball, that could be something to watch. Or decreased 3 miles an hour on his fastball, that could be something. Blows out his elbow or blows out his knee or something like that, that's relevant to watch too. That's kind of like what I'm looking at. I don't watch a ton of spring training games on TV, at least. I'm not checking leaderboards consistently, at least traditional stat leaderboards, just because I think, like, sometimes I look at it from a fantasy baseball perspective, and I don't want to be fooled unnecessarily by, oh my God, that, you know, Eric Hosmer is hitting 390 in spring training. Like, is this finally the year? No, it's not.
Wow.
But, I joke about Hosmer, but now he's bad. That's kind of what I'm looking at. I have been to spring training for work. I love it. It sounds cliche, but the fresh morning dew and the pop of the mitt and all that sort of stuff is just kind of fun to be around. It's a great time of year. Great time of year.
Sure.
Final thoughts. I'd like to bring up one. Doug Fister retiring. Yes.
Happy trails. I like this. Why do I like it? Because for every egotistical, selfish, money-hungry, ungrateful sort of label that gets thrown on athletes from time to time, whether it's deserving or not, not enough attention or respect gets paid to guys who make decisions like this. Doug Fister, multiple offers on the table, decides, in his words, that chapter two is what he's more focused on, what he's looking forward to. And from all accounts, that sort of means family. He's more worried about his family at home than he's worried about anything else at this point, and that's where his focus is. So Doug Fister, hell of a job, my friend. Clean off those spikes one last time. Tip your cap, wave to the crowd, and thank you, my friend, for the effort. You deserve every fucking bit of what you got. Enjoy the family. Enjoy them little niños, and enjoy your life. Enjoy chapter two, Mr. Fister.
Yeah, one of my favorite Doug Fister stories was when he had his mouth guard in his ear and the other team tried to report it to the league. I forget who they were playing, but the other team tried to report it to the league that he had an earpiece in to like relay signs.
Yeah.
To the batters. The batters. Hilarious. Doug Fister, consummate professional. Is that it?
He gone.
Wow. So we are, I had to say. Wait, what?
It's really all I had to say. Just acknowledging Doug Fister.
Yep.
Doug Fister, consider yourself acknowledged. We are heading to Arizona all next week. If you are going to spring training and you're going to be bopping around different camps in Arizona, be on the lookout for Dallas. You can't miss him. He looks like Animal from the Muppets. If you are in the area and you want to come say hi, we will be tweeting where we are day to day. Because as of right now, no clue. No clue what's going on. We're going down there. We have guests lined up. We have ideas for different things that we want to do content wise, but in terms of where we're going to be on which day, don't know that yet. We're going to figure that out. And when we do, we're looking forward to seeing you down there. So, come on out and Arizona Tourism, visit arizona.com/springtraining. Be sure to incorporate that into your trip if you are going to be in the area next week, and we'll have fun. We'll have some quality time together, Dallas.
We shall. Looking forward to it.
Wow. All right. So the next time we record, we'll be live from Arizona. So we'll see you there.
Holla.